I know you haven't finished your meal yet, but there are two or three announcements for the next couple of weeks that we'd like to bring to your attention just before we bring Adele back for questions. Next week, it's sort of a SACPA feast because there are two events. In fact, there are three events, but two for the public and one for moderators. So if that's confusing, let me take them one at a time. Next Wednesday afternoon, a SACPA on campus session. Mike Hudima from Edmonton, a Greenpeace activist, will speak on why direct action. That session will be in the afternoon, especially for students, but the public are welcome and encouraged to attend. It'll be held in the Galileo's Gallery in the Student Union Building. If you're not too familiar with the university, the Students' Union Building is the round one that's been there for quite a while before you go down the hill. Inside the round building, you've likely had a snack sometime in the food court. Galileo's lounge is right, gallery is right behind the food court on the north side, if you're one of those people that can find north when you're inside a building. So get inside the round building, the Students' Union Building, and ask for Galileo's gallery, and that session goes 4 to 5:30 in the afternoon. And where on earth would you park in the afternoon when the university is full of cars? You park in the far west lot. And where's the far west lot? It's on the far west corner. If you're looking at, you're standing in the parking lot and you're looking towards the new health center, the gymnasium and so on, the health and wellness center is on your right. Behind you is the parking lot you're supposed to be in. That's the far west lot. And there'll be a designated section for SACPA on campus. Just park where you can. That's session number one, next Wednesday afternoon. Session number two is our regular Thursday noon here. And the topic is the global financial crisis. Might be of some interest to you. What happened? What is being done? The speaker is Dr. Alec Heliner. He's an economist from the University of Waterloo, and the session will be moderated by Ray Speaker. And that's our usual session here on Thursday. If you happen to be a moderator, there's a moderator training session. It's too bad it's next week because I didn't get trained. Anyhow, I'm following the script. The moderator training session for all of us who are moderators for this current session, 2008-2009, occurs next Thursday evening, November 20th, 7 to 8, in this room. So you get acquainted with how to use the audiovisuals and so on. So it's 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock next Thursday evening. So those three sessions. And if you're confused about that, you can look on the SACPA website, www.sacpa.ca, and of course all that information is there. And like Adele said, she's listened to several sessions on the SACPA website and found them very helpful. So you can do that too, and you can keep the discussion going and put in your written comments about it. There's also a suggestion box out in the lobby for new ideas or complaints. And today, the topic that's fresh in your mind is, should we keep Alberta nuclear free? And Adele is going to come back to the podium and answer your questions. Adele, would you please come back? When you ask your questions, do the usual, state your name, keep your comments brief, and limit them to one or two questions. And they have to be at the microphone because we're recording all of this, including the question period. So if you're not at a microphone, people at home won't be able to listen to your question or the answers. So please go to a microphone, state your name, and briefly get to your question.
Adele, my name is Douglas Mitchell. Is this thing on? Can you hear me?
No. Just one second. That mic is not working now.
Me, it's working. Is that working now? No? How is that? Nope, still not.
Technology, hey? And if it won't work in a microphone, well, how do you think it's going to work in a nuclear plant?
Gladly, I'm dressed up because I'm going to... So that's why I'm going to dash out after I've asked my question. Adele, thank you for bringing us your concerns, which mostly centered around the NIMBY aspect of nuclear energy. I think we as Albertans have to be concerned with the broader picture, and I wonder if you'd like to address that, the perils mining and milling uranium at its source, mostly in Saskatchewan, and then, of course, the building and commissioning of these buildings and the disposal of the waste that emanates from them, quite apart from all the concerns which I can understand rightly you are involved with.
Can I just ask the audience, did you hear the question?
Okay, to my knowledge, when the full, shall we say, cycle process of getting to a nuclear plant is analyzed, from when you find uranium someplace in the ground until the electricity comes through the plug-in in our house, it's a very expensive process. It's a very carbon production, a high carbon production process. It's said that it would take a nuclear plant in operation for at least 10 years after it's built before the whole process even becomes carbon neutral. In other words, when people say, oh, there's no carbon released from a nuclear plant, you can't just count the day that it starts operating. There's a high release of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere in the production of cement, in the transportation of goods to get here, in the preparation of the site, in the mining operation, in the processing operation. The most contaminated site in Canada for any kind of pollution is in the town of Port Hope in Ontario, where uranium is processed into the form where it can then be made into those little pellets that go into the fuel rods that are put into uranium plants. And we have a resident in Grand Prairie named Pat McNamara, who moved from Port Hope to Grand Prairie and was president of the Nuclear Free Alberta Group because of his knowledge of that full cycle of what is required to get a nuclear plant. This is why I say it's not just what will end up at the site, perhaps by Grimshaw, it's what it will do to the water, the earth, the environment, all over this country to get to have that one little plant working in the Peace Country. And if we're talking 12 of them somewhere in Alberta, that's terrible. That's way more than what we need. And the sites that are sort of targeted in the province will probably relate to where there are large quantities of water. I think it was Albert Einstein that said nuclear is the biggest waste of water he ever heard of. You had to boil this water to create steam to get, you know, a turbine to turn to create electricity. Why not just put the turbine in the flowing water of a river to start with and let nature do its thing? Or that's the principle behind wind turbines. Thank you, sir.
Just before we have the next question, on your way out, I want to tell you that there are, I was going to announce this later, there are handouts on the table, and one of them is a map of Canada with all of the existing reactors, etc. So please pick those handouts up.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm Patty Johnson. My question is, while you are promoting keeping Alberta nuclear free, how was Helen Caldicott received in Calgary? Were they saying not in their Calgary backyards or in Alberta as well, or not in Alberta?
Helen Caldicott is a doctor who has headed up several international groups that have to do with the study of nuclear effects on people. There's a group in the United States, I'm scrambling in my papers to see the name of it. That's a movement by 23,000 doctors to just educate other doctors about the health effects related to nuclear. Dr. Caldicott came to Calgary and not only spoke to the public, but she did speak to a large group of physicians that were invited in to listen to her at a session at the university. And in Edmonton, she also spoke to the public at large. She tried to make an appointment to speak to our Alberta expert review panel on nuclear power, and they declined to speak to her. They didn't consider that her expertise as a doctor was relevant to whether Alberta would get nuclear power or not. And that was one of the big issues after she spoke in each town, that people felt when there is already so much known about the effects on human health and this independent body in Alberta won't consider her expertise. They might not consider my expertise because I'm obviously, you know, in the fray of things right there. But at the same time, when you have a person who's been nominated for a Nobel Prize that comes to our area, she does a lot of work in the United States. She was a professor at Harvard. She does a lot of work in Australia. 30 years ago, she was one of the people that were helping to prevent the French atomic bomb testing in the islands in the South Pacific. So this is a woman that's had a lot of input, and to be totally ignored by the experts was shameful.
How about in Calgary? The question was, did the people in Calgary think just, well, not in my backyard, or was she well received there?
Yes. In fact, there were probably four times as many people turned out to the presentation in Calgary as in Edmonton, and it seemed that a lot of the concern raised there was because the citizens groups that have been active in Calgary have already raised the issue, and many people are concerned about it. Sometimes lack of participation is, in a sense, lack of knowledge. People didn't know that this was a session that they need to pay attention to. Whereas in Calgary, with the citizens advocating the use of sustainable energy, the cause group, there was a lot of work done. There's another group in Calgary that's, I shouldn't say in Calgary, in Canada, that is advisors to our Coalition for Nuclear Free Alberta, and that's the Council of Canadians. They're a group, and I want to say 75% women across Canada who are taking on the cause of protecting water, protecting the land and the future for our children. They're big supporters of David Suzuki.
My name is Cheryl Bradley, and I really appreciated how articulate you are in expressing your views.
Thank you.
And I also appreciate your courage in taking what's perceived as an unpopular position in your community. I know it does take a lot of courage. I'm wondering if you anticipate getting a fair hearing ultimately of your views in the regulatory processes that will have to be engaged to consider this proposal. And would you get a fair hearing? I'd like you to explain what you foresee would be the decision-making process that will unfold as this project description unfolds. Like, has there been an actual application yet? And if so, who has it been to? And where would the hearing, who would hear it? Is it provincial, federal? And how would you see yourself getting a fair hearing?
There is a process, we are told, in place. And people like Jim Harding say to us, don't sit back and wait until the process officially starts or it's too late, it's too far into the, should I say, politics of it. The Canadian Nuclear Safety Council is a federal body and is to look into, so to speak, the safety issues here. The first stage is that Bruce Power or any nuclear bidder, so to speak, has to put in an application to the Environmental Assessment Agency, and they look at, so to speak, the physical, the human, the side effects both for and against a nuclear facility. But again, in order to participate in that, you have to be accepted as a they have a word for it, intervener. And quite often you get 10 minutes on the program. You cannot have sort of repeat interveners to say every one of us that are 250 living next to the plant could each have 10 minutes, because if they consider that we're in the same situation, that's one case. So I know that we already discussed what different effects would happen to people out of that group in the neighborhood. From the point of getting a fair hearing on this, we're actually frightened off by the fact that when the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission found that Chalk River in Ontario did not meet the safety regulations at a nuclear facility, the one that produces medical isotopes, and that facility was closed by Linda Keane, that was the president of this independent Canadian Nuclear Safety Council, you will recall that the federal parliament overruled her decision, and then she was later fired. And so it tends to make the average Canadian wonder how much democracy really exists in our government. And the idea that the federal government has already signed this global nuclear partnership would seem to indicate that the federal government is in agreement with this on an international level. And we don't need to talk party politics here, because the federal government of Canada has been involved with the supply of nuclear materials, uranium-based, to the United States since before the first bomb was dropped in the Second World War. North of us, down the Mackenzie Highway, gunny sacks of uranium were brought down by truck and moved by just people who live in Grimshaw, by hand, gunny sacks of uranium and put on the train at Grimshaw and sent on its way to be part of the program that was called the Manhattan Project, whereby the United States did all the testing and came up with the two atomic bombs that were, you know, used in the Second World War. There have been several bomb testings done, not exactly where people were destroyed like that, but again, when you think of the amount of radioactivity that was created, and you could see the, you know, results of it right there in Japan, there have been something like 500 major tests done in the world in the past 50 years. All of that's up there in the atmosphere, or it's settled in the water or on the land. So when we talk about the, I guess, fair shake element here, we're not just talking about whether our municipal council is somebody that we have to convince. And there's a lot of passing the buck. The MD says, ultimately, it won't be us that decides. The province will have a say in it. And the province says, having gone through a provincial election and a federal election, everybody passes the buck. The federal government would have ruling over certain things, and the provincial government doesn't like that. You might have heard halfway through the federal election that Premier Stelmach said, we don't want Ottawa to be telling us whether we can have nuclear in Alberta or not. We will decide what our own energy mix is. And the MD has the power to say, well, if we don't review this portion of land to be delegated for industrial subdivision, I guess it won't go there, but it could go somewhere else. So,
my name is Lawrence Hoy. Let me compliment you on your education, but I would encourage you to get some more education, because some of the things that you're saying are wrong. First of all, you've already lost the argument about a nuclear free Alberta, because in fact there is a reactor on the University of Alberta campus called Slowpoke.
We know that.
So don't try to peddle the idea that Alberta is nuclear free. Secondly, you mentioned that these nuclear plants consume water.
What you're really saying, though, is that at least the way I understood it, the plant itself, the nuclear part of it, consumes the water. That is not true. A nuclear plant does not consume any more water than a steam-fired plant that's fueled by coal or natural gas. About two-thirds of the heat that comes out of a nuclear plant or out of a coal-fired plant, in fact, goes up into the atmosphere. So this idea of consuming water is just not true. You mentioned Chernobyl. Well, one assumes that by this that all nuclear reactors are the same, and that's not correct. Most of the reactors that are built in the Western world have containment facilities. The Chernobyl one did not have any containment facilities. And as a matter of fact, in North America, not a single person has died from the operation of a commercial nuclear power plant.
Do you have a question to bring? Because
I guess my question is that you are peddling fear, and in fact, you're talking about a lot of things that maybe happen. Why don't you folks, in fact, deal with one of the real issues of 450 people being killed annually on the highways in Alberta? That's real. This other is all ifs, ands, and maybes.
Thank you for your question.
I recognize what you have said. I'm not pleased that you're trying to put words in my mouth. But at the same time, when we talk about, for example, water consumption, we're not saying, yes, it's been destroyed or, you know, it's not there. But it's no longer in the lake or in the river, and it goes into the cycle, and it takes with it radioactivity. That's part of our concern. When you talked about Chernobyl, we do recognize that that was a total different type of technology, but the nuclear industry today is trying to tell us that we should accept technology that has not even been tested yet, and so we have a fear of that. When you say there is a certain amount of spreading of fear here, that's true. We are afraid, and I don't, you know... Yeah, exactly, with good reason. It's not that I'm afraid only for myself or my grandchildren. It's like I said to you, it's our fear of what the nuclear industry itself does not know, and yet they still keep telling us it would be good for us for all these other reasons. When you say there haven't been any deaths on a plant by people, that's not what worries us. It's the deaths that relate to, for example, cancer, leukemia, the mutation genetically, that sort of thing. But when you say there aren't many accidents because we have containment units, there's a calendar out. I've only seen the version up to about 1998 that tells you for every day in the year where there has been an incident related to a nuclear operation somewhere in the world where there are nuclear facilities. And I'll tell you that there are 56 days out of the year where something has not happened, and on most of the days of the year there's 4 or 5 incidents are happening. They just don't tell you when there's been a spill here, when there's been a leak there, and when somebody has been sick or injured because of it. Death is one thing, but I want to say agony of going through children having cancer if they live in the immediate vicinity is not something that we want to relate to. The real issue, yes, there are people killed on the highway, but I can't solve everything. There's no silver bullet. We know that there are problems with the tar sands. We know there are problems with, just like you're saying, an airplane crashes and how many people die in one site. It's a total different issue as far as I'm concerned. We don't compare how many people are killed on the highway as to help us determine whether we should have a nuclear plant. And when there is a research nuclear facility in Edmonton, yes, it's there, but it's very small. And again, we don't know whether there's any, contamination going out to the public. We don't believe so in that type of reactor. But it's like people saying, oh, well, iodine is a pill that you can buy in the health food store. So why are you making a big deal about, you know, iodide that is coming out of a nuclear reactor?
Well, we've got about 4 minutes left, 3 or 4 minutes. But two questions, could we have a minute and a half each, please?
Yeah, I'm Patty Johnson again. I just wanted to make a comment and more or less raise the issue around, and if you could comment on it. The there was a report, I believe, if I have my facts correct, out from the Cancer Board that short-tailed a health report on the Lubicon First Nations up in and around that area. And they have, if many of you may know, struggled with their health concerns, and nothing has really been done. And I would like to ask you, is this going to further affect them in that area?
Early in my speech, I mentioned that when the nuclear industry came looking for a site, they had certain criteria. One of them I didn't get to mention was that they wanted a site that had no Aboriginal land claims. The west side of the Peace River has no land claims because everyone signed the treaty in 1899. On the east side of the river is where the Lubicon Cree are, and they have no settlement. They're very upset over this. The whole Native Association of Alberta has come together, and a local band, Duncan's Band, that's in the same municipality I'm in, are heading it. All Aboriginal bands in Alberta have spoken out against nuclear development. The Lubicons themselves, with the health issues that they have and whatnot, I don't know of the recent studies related to it. I know they also had tuberculosis problems because of insanity, because of lack of water, etc. Right now, they're terribly upset because TransCanada Corporation, that's part of the Bruce Power Alberta, have stockpiled literally a whole airport strip of 42-inch pipe, and they are proposing, TransCanada, to build this gas pipeline right across Lubicon territory. And total disregard for the fact that these people live there and haven't had their settlement. TransCanada has a lot of power, and the natives are, again, very distressed by this.
Time for just one last question,
sir. I'm Trevor Page. Thank you very much for your presentation. France, 80% of its power is generated from nuclear energy. I was disturbed to hear what you said about the health study in Germany. Could you elaborate on that? And specifically, is it causing the government to intervene, the German government, to either close down nuclear plants or not to license any new ones? Thank you.
When I leave home, I walk around with my BlackBerry, and I looked at it this morning, and I have an email in there that is talking about the German issue. There's a train moving from France to a depot in Germany yesterday and today, and there are 14,000 people marching to try to keep the train from stopping. It's delivering spent fuel from France into a place in Germany, and the people don't want it. The German government, I believe in 2003, had passed a motion to just let their nuclear plants live out their natural life, and so between, I think, 2013 and 2020, they will be out of nuclear. They're also increasing their wind and solar power to the point that by the time nuclear is finished, Germany will have gone to a total sustainable alternate form of energy. France has, as you say, 80% in nuclear. I haven't heard as much about their actual program, but I know that there was a lot of people very upset over the hidden
information related to storage of nuclear waste there when it was found that there was liquid coming out and getting into local water supplies, and it had been known for about a year and a half before the public was made aware of it. And here the people were using that water for their household consumption, to water their vineyards, to do all sorts of things, and now when it, you know, came to light that they were in danger, they were having to make alternate forms, and they were very upset about it.
Thank you.
And you said last night, I think, that Germany has decided not to, they're going to phase out their all their reactors, and they're not going to have any more because
right.
of the health risks. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Adele. Adele wanted to go ahead.
I do like to recognize that there is a lot of information that we all need to know about this subject. We have just started, we the people in the Peace River area, for probably the last 16, 18 months. It is an uphill battle when you're taking on a nuclear industry in Canada that is funded and subsidized and calls into effect, publicity campaign that hires the likes of advertising companies that used to tell us cigarettes were good for us too. More doctors smoke Camels than any other brand. That type of advertising is what is being used now in the nuclear industry. If you are keen to see what's happening with the material that comes out on that side, it is not one of the email addresses we've put on the information sheet out there, but you just go to like brucepower.ca or something like that, and you can see what kind of information they give. They pass out $15 binders of glossy colored paper to people to study, and we can't compete with that. We have to talk about it. We can't be...
Our time is up, unfortunately. I know how passionate you are. There's a partition that was started in the spring when James Harding was here, and about 16 people from SACPA attendees signed that petition, and Adele brought a copy of that. So there's outside, there's a blank sheet of the same petition, and the instructions are you can't sign it twice. So if you don't know whether you signed it, I have a copy of those who signed in the spring, like Sylvia Campbell did, and I don't think Gordon was here, and Knut did, and several other people. So look and see if you want to sign that petition. See if you signed it once already. You can't sign it twice. The other handouts are there, and there's an order form. Adele had hoped to bring copies, CDs, of Dr. Helen Caldicott's talk, and they're not yet available on CD. We understand they're going to be somewhere between $5 and $10. So there's a blank sheet of paper with that on the outside. If you want to order a copy, guaranteed it's not going to be more than $10. It might get $5. Put your name and a phone number down, and we'll order you a copy. Again, thank you, Adele, for being such a wonderful speaker and an aggressive, articulate, wonderful woman, and a teacher to boot. Thank you.